Prosperity, inner peace, the law of attraction, and more. Tap into good vibrations to start your weekend feeling uplifted and optimistic. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Fridays from 9 to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Good morning. Welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie, and today on the show we have Betty Kovac, who is the author of The Miracle of Death. So we're going to be talking about death and a lot of issues related to, well, this, it's a really interesting book, and you're going to love the show. If you want to get on the air and ask a question, the number to call is 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. I'm also trying out Skype, so I think if you want to add me, you need to know my email address, which is spiritualshow@gmail.com, and you can check out more information about the show at spiritualshow.com. You may be listening right now on 101.9 FM in Vancouver or online at citr.ca, cosmicdimensions.com, Empower Radio, or on the Co-Creator Network. And I just want to let you know that coming up in October, Stuart St. John is going to be on the show again, and he is the composer of the music for the Abraham Hicks Sarah book series. And he was on the show last year, I believe, and he is now doing soul music, soul readings. And so in October, he's going to be on the show doing that. And if you want to have a free soul reading from Stuart St. John, he's actually going to be picking three lucky listeners by October 1st. So check out my website, spiritualshow.com. By the end of the day, I will have the information up. Just go to my website and click on upcoming shows, and the information will be there on how you can apply to have your chance to get a free soul reading with him. And he's going to be picking three lucky winners on October 1st, I believe. So now, without further ado, we have Betty Kovac. Hi, Betty.
Hi.
Hi, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So your book, The Miracle of Death, I want to ask you, first of all, I know that you experienced some loss in your personal life, which is obviously a big part of what the book is about. But what really inspired you to write this book? And can you tell us a little bit, first of all, about your background?
Yes, well, my professional background is teaching. I taught for many years symbolic language, mythology, and comparative literature, and also writing. So I was constantly, on a college level, talking about these ideas that literature relates to us, reflects back to us about life. But I really had spent so much time in an academic situation that there came a time in my life in which I knew I had to break through those walls of academic limitation and begin to experience more on a deeper level. I had always kept my dreams, and since I had studied symbolism and myth and dream and vision, I was always open to these kinds of experiences. And of course, in teaching mythology, I was always teaching, as Robert Graves says, someone else's religion. It was their spirit, the world's spiritual traditions and the kinds of experiences that they had. And I used to say to my students, you know, when about some of the experiences, I am totally open to this as a reality because we see it all over the world, but I have not had some of these experiences, but I'm open to them. Well, I went to Peru and worked with an Amazonian shaman, and then later shamans from the Andes. That was just another step, I think, in opening me to these other dimensions. And about 2 years before the deaths occurred in my family, I began to have very profound experiences. And I wrote in my journal at that time that it felt like I was being prepared for something. And I was, and I'm very grateful for those experiences. My mother was killed in 1990 by a car as she crossed the street. And then the next year, my son was in a car accident, and he was in the hospital. And the day that, for 13 days, he was in the trauma center. And the day and the hour that they took our son off of life support, except for the respirator, was the exact day and even the exact hour that my mother had been killed 1 year before. And then in 2 years later, 2 years and 4 months later, my husband was also killed in a third automobile accident. So after our son's death, my husband and I were definitely focused on death, and we had many experiences before our son's death, and also many experiences, profound experiences, with his consciousness after his death. So I wanted to write the book because it was these experiences that really saved us and helped us to heal and have a much more expanded consciousness. And I wanted to write the book to help others because I think death is one of the most difficult things that we experience when we lose children or people we love in any relationship. It's so hard to get through because our culture has lost the deep meaning of death.
So, Betty, I think we should start with that because the meaning of death, as you say, it is so deep. What to you and your interpretation through these experiences and through your years of experience, what is the meaning of death to you?
Well, it probably, you know, we don't have the language for it, but it is a mystery in the same way that birth is a mystery. In fact, it is birth into another dimension. But our culture has so cut us off from experiencing that mystery that we've lost that wisdom, so that we suffer so intensely when we lose someone to death. And you know, in the ancient world, every initiation into larger consciousness had to do with an initiation into the meaning of death, the mystery of death, because it was well known that if we can experience that mystery of death, then we can live life fully. But if we don't experience that mystery of death, then we are really thwarted in our view of life, and we live in fear. And it is, it's a really difficult life that we've had in the Western world when we have reduced ourselves to a belief in the materialistic world and that there's nothing after that. This is a real aberration from anything that's come before, so that we know of. So now, of course, scientists are moving us so quickly beyond a materialistic worldview. I mean, many scientists, especially, I would say, the cutting-edge scientists, know that matter is only one dimension and that the roots of matter are in consciousness, that consciousness comes first and creates the world. So this mystery of death has to be experienced. It has to be felt. It can't be just in our left brain that we have an abstract knowledge of, although that helps us to be open for the experience. But it is an experience, a feeling experience, of really knowing that death is birth into another dimension. And this is just absolutely the life. It's a part of life, birth and death. In our culture, we've honored birth and we've celebrated it, but we don't know what to do with death. And we've cut it off. And I've had people come at book fairs and things like that, and they see death on the book, and they say, I don't want to talk about it. So it's really, it gives us a lot of suffering if we don't understand it.
And Betty, it sounds like almost what you're saying is that our fear in the Western world, our fear of death, is one of the things that prevents us from truly living.
It is. It absolutely is. And it's also that fear and belief system that we have that there is nothing beyond matter actually builds the walls that not only prevent us from living fully, but prevent us from being in touch with other dimensions, which would help us to live fully, because the full life is a multidimensional life.
So, Betty, now I'm curious about these multi-dimensions and through your communication with your son after his passing, in the book. First of all, where can people get your book?
Actually, Amazon is a very good place to get it. It's easy. But in bookstores, it may or may not be in the bookstore, but you can always order it through the bookstore, or you can get it from the Comlock Center. That's www.kamlak.com.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. So through your experiences with death, you have been opened up to these other knowledge of these other dimensions. Do you know how many dimensions there are, or what kind of knowledge have you been given?
Well, you know, I think that physicists are really beginning to open to a science that is beginning to be worthy of the miraculousness of the universe. In fact, some people say that modern science is now becoming a science of the miraculous. It appears miraculous to our view when we have been so stuck in such a limited, a very, very limited and restricting worldview. And of course, we're suffering all kinds of things. We're suffering all kinds of addictions as a result of being thwarted in this worldview. So they, of course, are realizing that there are many dimensions. I don't know how many dimensions there are. I know that there are many beyond the material, and that we can have access to that dimension where those we love have died. We can have access. We can communicate with them. Very often, our lack of openness prevents that, or our fear, or our belief that there is nothing. I think that's changing. I just returned from England, where I gave a talk at the University of Kent in Canterbury, and the other speakers were scientists who are working with people who, we've all heard, of course, of near-death experiences. They're calling it now actual death experiences, where they are flatliners, and the kinds of experiences that they are able to report when they return of everything that happened in the material world around them when they were dead. But they also are having other experiences. And as these scientists say, there is so much evidence now that we must pay attention to it. And so I think we're really changing. And so many, many people have had experiences with their loved ones after death that we live in a very different age than we did when I was a child.
So, Betty, you mentioned that, you know, when you were teaching mythology, and you had said that you hadn't had these experiences personally, and now it sounds like you have. But what was the shift? Because when you're searching spiritually, there are so many different paths. Some people say you have to go sit on a mountaintop for 5 years and practice yoga. Other people say you've got to stop eating meat and stop smoking cigarettes, and you know, and then other people say none of that really matters. It's just your level of openness. So what in your experience is it? Why is it that some people are able to tap into, you know, being a medium or being able to access life on the other side, and other people aren't?
Well, I think that we all are. And I think that, you know, I've had people say to me, well, you know, I would never be able to have your experiences. But that's a belief right there that can prevent it. And I always try to say, you can have your own experiences, but we do have to believe in ourselves, you know, believe that, and know that we can. But there's still more to it than that. I think we really have to confront the kind of addiction that we have in the Western world. And it's an addiction that I myself suffered from, and it is the addiction to rational thinking. I had such an experience, a visionary experience, in which it was really clear to me, and I had to experience it, and that's what visionary experience is, that we experience it, and we know it because we live it, in that vision, that how addicted I was to the rational world is that, and I'd been trained in that, and after all, I was Western. And so the book, for those who are listening who have suffered from this, and most of us have, the book is also a journey reflecting my own attachment to the rational world and wanting to prove and having to have evidence. Well, we will get the evidence, but and sometimes it's the kind of evidence that just delights the left brain all over the place, but it isn't always. It's an evidence of experience and of transformation within ourselves. But I had to go through that journey, still honoring and loving, of course, the left brain, but allowing the right brain to dream and have visions, which I did, but I was limited in being able to experience their fullness because of my too deep a connection to the left brain and not really valuing equally the dream and the vision. And so that's been a journey, because it's actually through feeling and through dreaming and the visionary world that, and the symbols of that right brain, that symbolic language, is the language of interdimensional communication. So when, for instance, William Irving Thompson talks about this so beautifully in his work, that there is a communication coming from another dimension, let's say from someone we love who is dead in this dimension, there will be like a pressure, like on a membrane of the right brain, and it will then be translated like a transformer. It will go into symbols or feeling, and if we can be open to that and honor it, then we will begin to open ourselves to communication. And so many people say, oh, I just made that up. Well, where did it come from? You know, it's, we need to honor what comes through, to be open to what comes through. And I think that can allow us. And as far as going on a mountaintop, some people can do it that way. Many of us do not do it that way. I think everyone finds her or his own way. And we must honor that, because the universe does everything it can to support our individuality and our uniqueness. And it will work with us.
Wonderful. Well, it's already time to take a break. We're speaking with Betty Kovach, the author of the book, The Miracle of Death. If you want to get on the air and ask a question, the number to call is 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. Or if you're online, you can call through Skype. I'm still testing this out, but you'll have to add me. Spiritual Show is the name, and the email address is spiritualshow@gmail.com if you want to make a call through Skype to get on the air and ask Betty a question right now. We'll be back with more synchronicity in just a moment.
Stand UBC presents Firewood Run September 27th at Jericho Beach Park. Run or walk to raise funds and awareness for refugees in Darfur, Sudan. Why Firewood Run? Fuel for cooking fires is an essential resource for refugees in Darfur, but by venturing outside the camps to collect it, women become vulnerable to attack. Participation in the Firewood Run will help to improve the lives of those caught in this situation. All funds raised will go to supplying energy-efficient stoves for refugee camps in Darfur. For more information or to register online, visit www.runfordarfur.ca, and that's the number 4.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. You can find me online, spiritualshow.com. If you want to get on the air and ask a question, again, the number is 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. Or you can connect with me through Skype, spiritualshow@gmail.com is the email address. And you can also just drop me a line through email if you're shy to get on the air, and I can pass that question on to Betty. Again, talking with Betty Kovach, the author of the book, The Miracle of Death. You can find her online at the Kamlak Center. That's KAMLAK.com. Welcome back, Betty. Hi.
Thank you.
So, Betty, a good portion of your book is about dreams. I mean, even if you look in the back of the book, there's like a glossary of the dreams that you've experienced.
Yes.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say I'm so glad that I kept a record, because the record showed me so much about what was happening even before his birth.
So let's talk a little bit about the dreams, because there are some dreams that seem to be a little more obvious than others, and some where you kind of have to connect the dots, and it's only like if you had just... we're looking at this one dream, you wouldn't see the meaning behind it. But when you put all the dreams together, you can see that it's telling a story and it's telling you something. So What was maybe the first dream that really started to get you paying attention, or did you just start recording your dreams to see what happened?
Well, when I was in college, I met a Lutheran minister, and one night I was at a party with other people who had just graduated from the seminary, and they were really wonderful, bright young people, and they were talking about all kinds of things that I hadn't heard of, and they were talking about mathematics and physics and Carl Jung. Well, after everybody left, I asked the young man I was with, it was his home, and I asked him, who is this Carl Jung? So he took me to his library, and I chose The Undiscovered Self and Modern Man in Search of a Soul. Well, I had always been worried about death because my mother, my mother's mother had died young, and so had her mother. And I was very afraid as a child that I would lose my mother. But death or dream was just something I could hardly bear to even say. But when I started reading Carl Jung and his deep understanding of the human psyche, I began to write my dreams down. Yeah, I didn't all the time over all of those years because I was in my, well, barely 20 at that time. And but most of them, and the big ones, I just didn't forget, but I did write them down. So when I was pregnant with my son, I had a very powerful dream. And if I could just quickly tell that dream, I was in my mother's old country schoolhouse, which I had never seen in physical reality. And it had one room downstairs, one room upstairs. I walked upstairs, and it was dark. And there was an old man sitting in a chair smoking a pipe. And over to his left were Chinese lanterns. One was lit and pulsating. And the old man was smoking his pipe and bringing the essence of this light into his pipe. And the smoke went out and created a painting which faced me. And when I looked at the painting, I saw from the lower left-hand corner a young man coming in. And he was carrying a sack on his back with not very much in it. Now, in those days, we didn't know whether we were going to have a boy or a girl, but it turned out that he was a boy. And he was going to go through a gate, which to him was death. He was, but to me, it was birth. And I think that really does give the picture of birth and death. It depends upon our perspective. At any rate, he walked past, after he entered the gate, he walked past a while, and then immediately turned to his left, walked up into the hills, and went out of the picture on the same side, but in multicolors and then in bright light. And he was gone. And I had the sense that this was my child. And then I looked at the old man, and he was still there. And it was clear that this was the old man, the soul, who was creating this young boy, and that we had an agreement that I would be his mother. And he was still present after the disappearance of the young man, and he even came over to me and took my hand. And this was a merging or a coming together of the two dimensions. Well, that dream disturbed me deeply because I was so afraid that my son would not live long. But, you know, we look at dreams. There are many levels of dreams, many symbols, and I tried to look at it many different ways. But as you say, of course, I recorded that dream, and it was when all of the other dreams began to come. And even after his death, I didn't really, although I'd be disturbed at the time, I would look at it in other ways, but they were all within the human psyche. And I think that for years we were prepared for his death at 20. When he was not quite 12, he had a dream in which he was in a trauma center, which he was when he was killed. He said, he told me the dream the next day, and we did have a tradition of telling dreams. He would tell me his dreams. And he said he was in a trauma center, but he was up above, and he was looking down at his dead body, he said. Now, he was 13 days there, but really, he was brain dead. They had him on all the machines in the world. We didn't know that at the time. And he said that then there was a period of darkness, and then he was in a place where there was a circle of light, and there were four boys to his left, four boys to his right. He was the fifth, and there was an eternal fire in the center of the circle of light, and on the other side of that was was an aura of the 10th boy, and he said we were all waiting for the 10th to arrive, and we knew that that was me, and that when I arrived, I would be complete, because 10 is a number of completeness. Well, that dream, and he told the details of the operating room he was in first, the off-white, the chrome, the bright white, the lights, where the gurney was, where the wash basin was, and he said, what do you think it means, Mom? And I was a little disturbed, because it was so specific that, but I tried to look at it again symbolically, and that he was going through changing from the boy to the man and so on, but he even drew a picture of it, and he wrote it in his journal, which I had when I walked into the trauma center that first evening. I saw that the gurney was where he had drawn it, as well as a wash basin, and I certainly remembered that dream. So then in the last year of his life, he had another precognitive dream, and in this time it was almost like a rehearsal. He and I were watching his body in the bed, and he was going out into the infinite, and I was calling him back to take care of the body, which I did in the hospital, that I said, don't get trapped in the body. If you have made the decision to go, then take care of the body. And I was also telling him, if you make a decision to stay, you can, and you'll be whole and well. I don't know where these things came from, but, when you're in a crisis, all sorts of things are available to you. But, and then his father had a precognitive dream, a vision. And his father was not one who'd been interested in these things, but he literally saw him when he was working in his study. He saw his car off the freeway and his body superimposed on it. And he knew that, and thought to himself, yo, it's almost time for you to do this. And then he felt terrible about it, but he heard Pishti's voice saying, that's right, Dad, I'll be out of the house for a little while. Well, Istvan didn't know what that meant, but of course after his death, in fact it was the day after his memorial, his consciousness returned with such fullness and celebration and joy, and wanting us to remember what death really is, and also to realize that the Earth is going through such a crucial time now, that each of us who are born on the planet is here for a reason. And it was a very profound time in our lives.
Betty, I want to talk after the next break about this Earth shift that we're going through, that you've been, I guess, discussing with your son, that he's been bringing forth this information to you. Just quickly, I want to ask, because we've been talking about precognitive dreams. Now, do you, in your opinion, think that all dreams are precognitive and we just haven't pieced them together yet, or is it just some dreams?
No, I think that there are many levels of dreams. Sometimes we have images simply because we have eaten things that aren't good for us, and I don't reduce the dream to that, but I mean, sometimes there are just physical expressions in pictures. Many times they're precognitive. Sometimes they are information truly coming from another side, of people communicating with us from the other side. And sometimes it's reflecting back to us things that we have left out of our consciousness during the day. There are many, many aspects to dreams, and I think if we become sensitive to them, it's just like with us, we could talk about many different things, and there are many different levels of experience, and I think it's the same with dreams.
Wonderful. Well, we'll be back with more of Betty Kovac, the author of The Miracle of Death, in just a moment.
Rude boys, don't cry, don't cry.
Rude boy, don't cry.
Scott T. Scenic Drive, every Friday morning, 10 a.m. till noon, CITR.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, Empower Radio, or the Co-Creator Network. And you can also find me online at spiritualshow.com. www.thebetterlife.com. We are speaking today with Betty Kovac, the author of The Miracle of Death. You can find her online at the KAMLAK Center. That's KAMLAK.com. And there will also be a link to her site on my website, spiritualshow.com. So Betty experienced a number of deaths. Was it three in your life, Betty? Your mother?
Three deaths within 3 years, yes. All by automobile accidents, different ones.
Mm-hmm. And so now you mentioned that your son, he passed on from this physical dimension, and then within just a few days, his consciousness returned. And I know that you want to talk about this earth shift that's going on, so please share with us some of the information that was passed on to you and communicated to you.
Well, it's, you know, after my husband had the first experience with PhD, he just said, you know, I don't even have the words. There are no words to explain it. But he said, I will never look at the earth in the same way again. And he really didn't. He became an anchor for me because I had to struggle with my rationale, which I experienced rationality at such deep levels that I realized that, you know, what we need to do, and this is part of the shift that we're going through, is that in the Western world, and we've influenced the whole planet now, is that we've been so limited to our left brain that the shift is allowing, expanding, and opening to the not only the right brain, but all of the brain components, and realizing that the heart is the fifth brain component, so that all of that energy can flow without being blocked. And but I want to say too that the experiences that we had with PhD were so peaceful and loving and real, and we were just so amazed, and I was so amazed through my husband because he had never read any of these things that I've read, and he was almost as though he'd been to India or somewhere. I mean, the knowledge that kept flowing through him, and he felt like he was remembering. And he said, this is what we're going through on the earth. We really don't respect ourselves enough to know that within each of us we have millions of years of experience. And what this shift is an opening up to that memory and also to that consciousness, because over and again, PhD explained that the individual mind is consciousness that is rooted in the mind of the universe. And there's a wonderful quotation, which I have in the book, from Dr. Haridas Chaturi, and it's this. He says, we need a worldview which shows how our deepest aspirations are related to the essential structure of the universe. In other words, when we long to be connected with those we love who have died, we long, we'd have to say that's a deep aspiration. Well, that is the longing of the universe for us to be connected, because love connects. Love relates and connects. And this was over and over again talked about by my son with us, is that when you love, you are connected. And if we can really honor that aspiration is an aspiration of the universe, then we know that the universe provides a way for us to be in communication with that connection and relationship. So it was the shift, and you know, you hear it everywhere practically we go now. I mean, scientists are well aware that since quantum physics in the last century, and now scientists are learning so much about the universe that they completely would poo-poo before, you know. No, that's not true. But with quantum mechanics, they began to realize the people who worked with that knew that there were other dimensions, and that, but they couldn't work it out. But in the last 50 years, scientists have. And so many things have happened in the last 50 years that I think will be coming to light, and our realization of these realities will completely change us and change our world. And it is rooted in our recognition of the power that we have, that we are the creators. We are consciousness that creates and co-creates. And we have such power that if we won't give it over to other people who would like to dominate us, either through university training or religions or politics, that we have tremendous power of love and creativity, that when we begin to realize this, our world will change. We'll also realize that we're so interconnected on the planet that what hurts someone in Bangladesh is hurting us in America, too.
So, Betty, when we talk about this Earth shift, there's a lot of talk about 2012. So is this the time frame that you're getting through your communication as well, or is it something that's more ongoing?
Well, I think it's ongoing, but it is true. Now, my son Pishti said this to my husband Ishtaban certainly more than once, that, now this was in the early 90s, he said, in the next 20 years or so is one of the most crucial periods of this shift. And it's interesting, you can hear this from so many people, whether they are in super intelligence, military, or whatever, when they're working in certain highly classified positions, they also are aware that the Earth is going through tremendous changes. Mystics and visionaries know this, too. And it does center around this time period, which I think it's not just, you know, 2012. I think that this whole period is very profound. Some mystics would say that if we're born now, if we're here now, we are here to participate and to co-create this shift. And I think that it's so important to realize that whatever myth we have been attached to in the past or whatever belief system, that we need to be open and allow a much larger view of what is possible to be available to us. Over and over in my experiences, there was that urging to say, to know that we create our realities, and that if we can focus our energies in the heart, that fifth component of the brain, so that all of us can function and be connected to our roots in the universe, that we can create the world that we want for ourselves and our children. We do not have to accept disaster, catastrophe, or all kinds of violence. We can co-create the world we want. That is perhaps the key message.
So, Betty, when you say focusing on your heart and this energy, is there a practical way that we can do that, or is this something that we just all have to figure out on our own?
No, we're so lucky to live at the time we live. I don't know whether you've heard of Heart Math or not, the Heart Math Institute.
No.
Well, it's just wonderful. The listeners can go to Heart Math Institute, and they have various programs that they teach and can help people with, and there's equipment you can, you know, DVDs or at least CDs that you can buy. They have a very simple process, which I can very quickly say something about, is that you literally focus on your heart. You know, in all cultures, it's known that the heart is the core, the seat of all feeling and knowledge. And when people really feel something, they'll always touch their hearts, won't they? I mean, we really feel like this is the core of our being. Well, now it's known that this is a brain in itself, and that it doesn't just take the messages from the other brain components and do it. It evaluates it and acts itself. So this is what we can do. If we have a question about something, or let's say we're very frustrated, we can't come to a decision, just, they call it freeze frame. You just stop everything. You sit down, and you literally focus on your heart, and you just breathe calmly, and then you imagine and you create the visual images of a time when you were very happy, a very happy time, at a very, very positive time. And so you focus on that and allow yourself to feel it, because feeling is the language that we need for healing. You feel it. And as you feel it, then you ask your heart the question, what is the solution to this frustration or problem that you're in? And it's amazing the clarity of mind that will come to you. That sounds very simple. We get better at it as we, some people just write off. I mean, once you do that, it changes the perspective so that solution can get in. But we become much better at it the more we try. So we now know, and HeartMath has proven this, that when negative, let's say, when we watch a very violent movie, that for, I can't remember whether it's 24, 48 hours afterwards, there's a certain immune hormone that is not produced for that length of time because of the violence. If we see something very positive, that hormone is produced and is very plentiful. So there are many, many ways in which HeartMath has shown that all of the things that every religion has taught, love, peace, relationship, compassion, that is what gives us our immunizations, and that is what is healing to us. So people could go to HeartMath to find out more about it, but it does work.
Wonderful. So is that heartmath.com, or should we just Google it's, HeartMath?
I think it's, yeah, you can go heartmath.com, and if that doesn't show up, well, then just Google it, and you'll get it.
Wonderful. Well, it's time almost for another break, so I just want to thank you again. We're speaking with Dr. Betty Kovach. She is the author of The Miracle of Death, and if you have a question for Betty, you want to get on the air, the number to call is 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR, or you can also contact me through Skype online if you're on your computer, or you can email spiritualshow@gmail.com. We'll be back with more Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul in just a moment.
Ever thought about volunteering with Big Sisters? Maybe now is the time. Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland provides girls aged 7 to 17 with a champion, a mentor who's there to simply be their friend and cheer them on. Become a study buddy tutor and spend 1 hour a week helping your little sister learn to love school. Or become a big sister and spend 3 fun hours a week just hanging out with your little sister. If you're age 19 or older, please visit bigsisters.bc.ca to find out more. Maybe now is the time.
Conservation is the first and best resource option for BC. Do your part. Turn off the lights when you leave a room and unplug your cell phone charger when charging is complete. Visit bchydro.com to find out more ways you can make a difference. This message brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
She'll make a lovely doll after I finish with you. I told you your webs were useless.
Spider-Man! He's melting!
It's too hot. It's too hot. Something must have hit the control lever. Turn it off.
Want to save energy and keep yourself comfortable? Turn down your thermostat 1 degree Celsius or consider installing a programmable thermostat. If every household in BC with electric space heating turned down their heat by 1 degree for 8 hours a day, it would save enough electricity to power science world for over 75 years. This Power Smart play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie, and we are speaking today with Betty Kovach, the author of The Miracle of Death. She experienced 3 deaths in her personal life over the course of 3 years, all through automobile accidents, and she has since learned to pay attention to her dreams as well as to communicate with her son, Pishti. Hi, Betty. Welcome back.
Hi, thank you.
Hi. So I ran so many ads because we had a call that came in. She didn't want to get on the air, but she wanted to thank you so much for the show and tell you how valuable it is. So thank you again for being here. And also the Heart Math Institute, that's math like numbers, right?
Yes, yes.
Math, okay.
And they wanted that combination because, first of all, it shows a combination of the heart and a very rational brain, but they have been able to prove through testing and measuring and math exactly how our relationship to the heart affects not only the brain but our bodies.
So I just went on to heartmath.com here, and there's the EM Wave PC Stress Relief System. Is this the right company?
That's it. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
And even children, young people who are having trouble in school, when they have had the heart math training, it has reduced aggression and also improved tremendously their ability, of course, to work in school. It's a wonderful institute.
Wonderful. And so the exercise that you had mentioned before the break was, if you're feeling overwhelmed and dealing with something difficult, is to just sit down and not, like, just put everything else aside and to really focus on your heart and think of the happiest time you can think of.
Yeah.
And really feel that.
And visualize it.
Now, what about for people who maybe feel like they haven't had happy times? Can they just make something up?
Sure. We can create what we would like to experience and feel what that would be like. There are things, many, many more than just this freeze frame, which I gave, many more practices of how to work with heart consciousness. If I could just refer just to a dream that I had, which reflects the mind perspective that we're usually in and how that can be shifted. And it's this shift that the heart brings about. I had a dream. This was before any of the deaths took place, but I had a dream that I was in Budapest. My husband's from Hungary, and I had a round flat sieve in my hand, and there were small pebbles on it, and I was sort of gently and thoughtfully shaking it, and then a disembodied hand abruptly appeared and just raked all the pebbles off of the sieve and said, "These do not belong in the city." Well, just that one part of the dream is very, very interesting, because that's what we're taught in the rational mind, is that this is true, this is not, this is rational, this is not. And, you know, the old saying, just give me the facts, ma'am, I don't want to know how you felt about it. But we're learning now that feeling connects us. Feeling is a very important way of knowing, of consciousness. The other part of the dream was that suddenly the scene changed, and I'm at the very heart of the city. Now, that's where the hand, disembodied, said the pebbles didn't belong. And an artist has gathered the discarded pebbles and created a work of art by placing these stones in a circle. And I, along with other people in the city, are walking, circling around them. We walk in silence because we're in a deep state of observation and contemplation. The body, mind, and heart are focused on this work of art. This is a wonderful thing about art, because it will ignite our feeling, and the feeling shifts the perspective. The atmosphere is charged now with a very creative energy. Then suddenly I realize that these pebbles are not pebbles at all. They are the very large standing stones of antiquity. And we've all seen these great mysterious standing stones of antiquity from the megalithic age, in which there's a circle and there's something mysterious and powerful about them. And then I feel the sacredness of their power. Now, this dream shows what happens when we move from the head to the heart. The perspective changes, and we can see things that we cannot see from the rational perspective. From the rational perspective, they were nothing but pebbles. They didn't belong in my life, the city life, the life constructed by mankind, humankind. No, they're out. No, not important. And that's it. But when the shift takes place by the artist within us and we shift to the heart, now the heart connects the mind and the body, and we see things we could never, never see before. So it shifts our perspective when we feel and shift to the heart.
Wonderful. Well, Betty, we only have a few minutes left in the show, so I'd like to kind of give you give you an opportunity to just add whatever it is that, I mean, this book is so profound. There's so much information here on the death experience, on life after death, as well as the shift that we're going through now. And I'm wondering what you think is the most important point or two that you want to get across about this book.
Well, there's so much, as you've just said, but the first step in our healing would be to let go all dogmas, all preconceived notions, belief systems, whether they are academic, religious, political. It doesn't mean we have to give them up. Just relax them and be open for a much larger perspective. All of the religions on the planet are truly rooted in the core of love. They can get all messed up out at the edges because people with just a rational, ego-centered, not heart-centered consciousness can really distort them. But if we go to the core of all religions, it's love. So if we would know that what we will discover if we are deeply religious, we will discover the depth of that religion. Not the orthodoxy, not the doctrine. We will discover the depth, and that depth will take us into something so much larger, so much more mysterious. And I think the openness is so important. I felt that my own, although I didn't want it, I still had been programmed to fear that there was nothing else except the material world. And as I began to have experiences, I still struggled with that. But the more I could open and know, then the more I could experience. So I think it is just having that openness from the heart to see the world from the center of feeling and love and longing for love. If, you know, those things we most deeply aspire to are in accord with the aspirations of the universe, and the universe will respond to us.
Wonderful. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. We do have a couple more minutes left. So now I forget what I was going to say. I want to get across also your website. It's kamlak.com, kamlak.com. And you do speaking engagements, correct?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that just in California, or do you travel?
Well, I just got back from England.
From England, yes.
So I travel wherever someone would like to have me speak. And I really feel that whatever years I have left, that, you know, I want to give whatever I have been able to gain and know and experience in my lifetime. And I think all of us have come with a gift, and we, now is the time to give it. You know, we all need each other's gifts profoundly.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your gifts with us here on the show. I really appreciate your time, Betty.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. So that was Betty Kovac, the author of The Miracle of Death. And if you would like to contact her, you can also get the book on Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, and you can contact her at kamlak.com, www.kamlak.com. And the Heart Math Institute she was speaking about, that's Heart Math, like numbers, M-A-T-H, heartmath.com, where you can find out more information about connecting with your heart and the loving energy of the universe. So again, I want to thank Betty so much for being on the show. Next week, we're going to have music, live music on the show with Surya. She's a local Vancouver musician, and it's going to be smack dab in the middle of 24 hours of all live music here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. So definitely check us out next week for that. Coming up later on in October, Stuart St. John is going to be on the show again. Now, he is the composer. He's the musician who composed the music for the Abraham Hicks book series, the Sarah books. And so he is doing this thing now that is called, it's musical soul readings. So he taps into your soul and he expresses that through music and also talks to you about it. So he is going to be giving away three readings on the show, and it's something that he needs to prepare beforehand. So check out spiritualshow.com later today. If you click on the upcoming show link on the main page, you'll be able to find more information about that. I think he's going to be picking the three winners by October 1st, so it is a bit time sensitive if you're interested in having a chance to get one of those readings. And also, I mean, you can sign up to get them through him directly, but if you want to have them on the show, check out spiritualshow.com, go to my upcoming show page and get more information there. So I'm going to close the show with music from our guest from next week, Surya. Here she is with Order to the Chaos on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Coming up next is Scotty's Scenic Drive.
It wavers. And We can see through all our fears that they truly are illusions, like the great ones always say. The Mahatmas who are everywhere, they never go away. Is there order to this chaos? Is there
just like me, it's easy to see how life is filled with impossibility. Running from fate, looking for an escape is oh so easy. Look around and see majesty and honor the gift that is she. I am thankful for existence today, and I'm grateful for where my life is at in this moment. Oh, for all the things I have, I would like to say that I am grateful for today. I am grateful for today. With a powerful message upon us, it's hard not to see the signs all around us. How long will it take to wake the true love within us? And it's all we need to rewrite history. Give honor to yourself.